Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
Oh, he's liking his Wednesday thing, apparently.
I am loving Wednesdays.
You like the midweek thing?
Absolutely.
Well, why didn't you say anything over the last year?
You know, just try to get in where I fit in.
We'll work around your schedule. You always fit in on Jaguars Today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, how do you describe it? We're not going to, again, Wednesday, we try to move ahead, and we'll look a lot at the Bucs and the Jags this week and what they can do, but how do you describe how you felt?
Well, you know, I don't even want to go back there, but
good.
I'll tell you why this week feels so blah, because it's a week that a lot of fans are worried. We're playing a team that's not good at all, and if we go there and lose, is the season pretty much over now? And now are we looking to, I hate to say it, the draft and all that kind of stuff? Are we going to be put through a season where, you know, we feel like, yep, here we go again? And then now we've got to start thinking about our moves for the offseason, and we can't really, you know, celebrate the fact that the next game is coming, the next game, because this game is so important, but it's so important against a team that is not very good, and if we lose, there is really nothing, honestly, it seems like, to look forward to, because everybody else that we play is better than them.
And from the fan base standpoint, I would agree with you on that. As a player, did you guys ever feel more pressure because of a game that everyone assumed you would win, or, you know, you're expected to win that game? Nobody's going to give you a whole lot of credit if you do win.
Yeah, I don't think it's we felt pressure from everybody else expecting us to win it. We feel pressure from ourselves to go out and win this game because
don't,
you know,
blow it.
Yeah, I just feel like with this team, we're clearly better than this team, even though the record doesn't show it, the points per game don't show it, a lot of things don't show it, but when you just really look at it, our quarterback is better than their quarterback at this time because he's young, throwing a lot of interceptions.
That's the biggest difference,
isn't it? It is. But that's a big difference. You know, when they're handing you the ball quite a few times, you should go down and score and put them out of the game. You should make them feel like we don't have a chance because we continue to turn the ball over and they're continuing to score. Now, if they turn the ball over and we don't score and we're just punting, or we're just getting three and they go down and get seven, now it changes the dynamics of the game. But we should win this ball game, and it's frustrating because now you go into this game and you're a dog going to this game, and most players don't think about that kind of stuff. Now they think, I can't believe they have us losing to Tampa Bay, but I just, you know, heard earlier on the drill that, you know, Blake hasn't won a road game, you know, and so they factor a lot of these things into it. There's got to be something there if you haven't won on the road, and it's not just him, of course, but, you know, the wins and losses are always staple to the quarterback's chest.
I think it's fair. I mean, what should they be favored on the road? Come on. I mean, you know what I mean? Look, the Bucs were a bad team last year. They earned the first pick in the draft. The Jags were a bad team. They owned the third pick in the draft. The Bucs have added a quarterback, which should ultimately make them better. They have won a game on the road this year, obviously playing at home this week, but they're both teams that are just kind of mucking around right now.
And
basically, Dave, when they say you're a 3-point favorite at home, it's basically they're saying you're dead even. We're giving you a few points for home field advantage.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of the way it goes in the National Football League.
Yeah, I understand that. But still, just, you know, pride-wise for a team, you still feel like, you know, we're better than this
You're
team.
Like, really?
Yeah, you
really?
Know.
But you have to, I mean, how can they, I don't see, I mean, maybe it hurts your pride, but you gotta internalize that, I think. You gotta turn around and say, look, we earned this reputation right now by not being able to go out there and beat a 40-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Although those guys in that locker room would still feel pretty decent about themselves just because they had the opportunity three times to win the game, you know, and it should have been won. They should be walking home with a smile to have that many opportunities to make those kicks. And so they don't feel like, yeah, we came out here and proved that, you know, what we should have proven, you know, to the fans. But We should have walked out with a win.
Did you feel that way as a player when you felt like you played well enough to win? And what I mean, it wasn't just Myers. Look, Myers is in the spotlight.
It wasn't just Myers.
He had the opportunity a couple of times, no question.
But that's
about
his job.
It is his job, and he did not do it right. Mm-hmm. He did not do it well. But the penalties, as much as anything, I mean. When you feel like, look, you know, I feel like a broken record, the outgain them, turnover margin, time of possession, all these things.
You had a 300-yard passer, rusher, and receiver. Essentially,
100-yard rusher, 100-yard receiver.
It was 298 yards passing, so it's not technically 300, but 100-yard rusher and receiver in that game, and you found a way to lose. How?
Yeah, I mean, they should still be mad at themselves, but that's the NFL. You can still be in tight ball games, drive the field, get down to around the 30-yard line, and you should expect to be able to kick a field goal to win the game. That happens in a lot of NFL games, and when you do it twice, you know, at the biggest parts of the game, and that you don't get that fruition from the kick, now you're like, okay, you know, we did what we were supposed to in those situations. You can't go back and look at everything else and penalties and all that kind of stuff. And yes, we should have scored more points and all that, but we did what we were supposed to at those times, and it did not go our way. So here we are at 1-3, and we're an underdog to Tampa Bay now. So,
well, we'll talk about over the next 2 hours what they can do maybe differently this week or more successfully this week to help give themselves a better chance to come away with their second win of the season. John Osier will join us in about 25 minutes with all the latest. Curious as to what his thoughts are on the timetable right now for Julius Thomas to return, because I don't think anything's going to help them more in the red zone and putting those touchdowns on the board than his healthy return. Obviously, Brandon Linder being out is a big blow. But we'll find out now about A.J. Cann, who they felt was a steal in the third round of the draft. He'll get his chance to play and play extensively the rest of the season for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Wednesdays brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter for all-size plumbing jobs. Metro Rooter, the one call to make at 695-1911 with David Garrard, with Fat Tony. We're back at Everbank, Tony, as the remodeling of the studios continues. But they've got us in good shape for today down here at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studio. We'll have our midweek injury report coming up a little bit later on as well. And we've got phone lines open to you right now if you'd like to get in. 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Today's fan feedback question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asks you, where's the biggest edge for the Jaguars, or at least in your mind, where's the biggest edge for Jacksonville as they take on the Bucks this weekend in Tampa? Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at DavidGarrard9, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and of course the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. We'll be back taking your calls. We'll talk to Johnny O coming up as well. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you, Dave. I feel like we talk about this a lot, and we mentioned it in the opening segment here, the offense getting bogged down in the red zone. Whether it's the red zone or getting not even to the red zone, you know what I mean? A lot of opportunities where the Jags got it to around the 40-yard line of the Colts last week. Couldn't move it. What happens when an offense stalls? Why is an offense, and I understand the field shrinks the closer you get to the end zone, but even out towards the 40, seems like there's plenty of room to operate. When you've got a team that can put together two or three first downs pretty consistently, but then all of a sudden hits that wall, is it just a matter of, hey, it's tough to sustain long drives, or is there something that you have watched from this team or other teams that have had this issue and say, here are a couple things here's a checklist, are you doing this and this correctly? What are some of the things that go into this?
Well, I just from me watching the game, it just seems like at times when they bog down for the run game, it's running into a brick wall a lot of times. Blake is not hitting the open guy, or he's not finding the open guy. He's not also, I think sometimes when you're a mobile quarterback like that and you're trying to sit in the pocket, you're trying to make these throws, you're trying to be as accurate as possible, trying to get the ball out of your hands, I think sometimes you have to just use your legs. You have to, like, move the pocket yourself. You have to do whatever it takes to get those chains moving when you get down in there and when you're getting close to the red zone. And he does it a lot of times, you know, on the other side of the 50, as he's crossing the 50, but then you don't see him use his legs as much anymore once he gets towards the red zone, into the red zone. I think they can move him more so that now it gives him a two-way go sometimes. If he's trying to do the bootleg or naked or keeper or whatever it is, he can still scramble up for 5 or 6 yards and have that opportunity to where it's now 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3, those more manageable third downs. But when they get in that 3rd and long, that 6 to 10, I mean, that's when defenses just tee off. And unfortunately, right now, they're just not very good on third downs. And so that's their biggest issue, is they're not very good on third downs all over the field. And so that's really is what caused them to bog down, because they get down to some manageable third downs when they get in the red zone, but they're just not hitting. They're not converting. And, you know, there's times where I think at times Blake will predetermine who he's going to and doesn't always clearly let the progression take over. And so that's what you get when you're a young quarterback and you're a young offense. Some guys aren't separating early enough. They're getting their depth on their routes, which is great. But when you get to a, 3rd and 6 and your route tells you to get to 8 yards, sometimes you got to break it off a little bit, because things are happening faster, especially in the red zone and especially on 3rd down in the red zone. And so I just think they're young, and so they're still trying to figure all these things out, but they're figuring them all out on game day. And on game day, they're not working for them at that time. They should be figuring it out in practice.
Why does it move faster? And I think this is probably an obvious question, but why, when it gets down to the red zone, is it moving faster? Why is it moving faster, particularly on 3rd down? What is the defense doing that is causing that?
Well, the defense doesn't have to back up that far. So you've really got to push them and drive them off the ball as receivers and make them get in their back pedal, make them feel like you are threatening them deep. And I think another thing, too, is when Blake has had those opportunities to throw the deep ball, just a normal go route on the outside, He's been missing it outside, out of bounds at times. And I'm thinking, you've got to keep it in the field of play, because you have these big receivers that are making plays, but you're not giving them a chance.
Is your guess that he is really just, you know, after last year had a lot of interceptions compared to his touchdowns? And that happens with a rookie. But I mean, Is that, you think it's in his mind a little bit that, hey, you know what? A throw out of bounds lets me live to fight another down, and maybe I'm going to try to really cut a little fine margin in here as opposed to throwing more of a 50-50 ball and risking it getting picked off.
Yeah, he's just being more cautious. He's being too cautious. I think when you have guys that have proven they can go up and make those plays for you, you give them a chance. You know, you're going to have interceptions, and I think the thing that maybe has been hard for him is battling back from those interceptions. I mean, you see Peyton Manning throw all these interceptions, but he battles back from them. The next drive, he goes down and he scores. He answers for his mistakes, and I think that's what's been tough for Blake. He's not been answering those mistakes. He continues to come out and try to throw the ball around, but he doesn't go down and get points. And so you get cautious, and you want to take these shots. It feels better to you when the guy is running 2 yards past the guy and you can just kind of lay it in there. But when they're running, you know, neck for neck, you think, well, this guy has just as much of a chance to catch the ball as my guy. And it worries him a little bit. And I think he needs to get over that fear and just let those guys go play.
And he did that against Miami, right? I mean, he took those chances against Miami.
Well, but if you look at the one to Allen Robinson, I mean, he was way past the guy. He scrambled out and threw it as far as he could, and he went down and made that catch. Now, he did throw it up for him a few times. Sometimes you get the feel, you get in that zone, you feel like you can throw it anywhere and everybody's going to make the play for you. But those times, ever since that, you know, ever since those interceptions and the one he had in New England, now he's a little bit more cautious, because he tried to throw the ball down the field to Mercedes and made a terrible throw and it got picked off. So those things, you want to be over him, and I'm sure he's over it, but he still has it in the back of his mind. So that's why he still wants to throw the ball down the field and make these plays. But it's just being a little too cautious with those plays. And so when you miss on first down, trying to throw the ball, now it's second and 10, and you try to run, and you only get 1 or 2 yards, now you're, you know, third and 8 trying to complete. And so that's when they get bogged down. Maybe he makes a completion for a 6-yard gain, but it's just not enough. I just think the team offensively is just not crisp. They're not sharp. Of course, we can all see that they're not sharp and crisp, because if they were just completing the ball down the field, then it wouldn't matter that they got, you know, on the plus 40 and then they got into the red zone. It wouldn't matter because they're sharp. If you go back and look at the Colts game, he throws a little fade route to the slot guy. And he misses deep, almost out of bounds in the back of the end zone. Well, he had Mercedes that was running what you call a stick route, just a 5-yard and out. And he separated from his guy. Normally, that's the first read. You can say, hey, I want to take this shot to my slot. But when you have your big tight end running up 5 yards, being physical, getting a good push, and then turning out, and you put the ball on him, I mean, that should be a touchdown.
Now, you say, and we can't know what the primary read is unless we know, right? And so unless you're sitting in the film room
and the coach says this is your primary, this is what you're looking at.
Right. So, but are there just occasions? So if you're going to run a fade, right, down in a short, tight area, you almost have to know that when you walk up to the line, right? Or at least by the time the ball is snapped, you look at the cover and you say, okay, they're not taking this guy away. He's not getting doubled, whatever the case may be, or they're not, you know, shading him to the inside where I'm trying to get him to the outside. I sounded halfway intelligent.
Almost.
I mean, you've been rubbing off on me. But, like, in that circumstance, so it's almost like you take the snap, little one-step drop, and you throw, right? Yeah. So, I mean, can that factor in when you see another guy breaking open? Is it reasonable to think that maybe you shouldn't see that guy if you really are pre-snap read that the fade is there?
Yes, and so that's what his coaches are going to say. They're going to say, if you get this look with this guy, you have the right to throw this pass. You don't have to. You can still throw it to somebody else. It's all about who you feel like your best matchup is with. And if you get the right look, then you want to take that chance. But if you take that chance, you want to give your guy a chance to go up and make the play. If he is got his guy beat by half a yard and he throws his hand up for the ball and it still falls out of bounds, there's no way you're going to complete that ball out of bounds. And so the only reason why I say that is that fade to that guy is a much tougher throw than letting your tight end, who's got a big body,
just
when you
basically
can
turn around,
just put it on him. That's what everybody else around the league does. So that's where I say you've got to learn those things. Do I take that chance that is maybe a 25% chance of me completing it? It'd be a great play. I've got the right look, all that kind of stuff, but I also have the right look with my tight end one-on-one on a linebacker that, you know, linebackers can't really cover.
Right. Do you think that Julius Thomas, I mean, obviously it's a hope, but do you think you expect that to help things? Julius Thomas, they're going to know, hey, we need to cover this guy, but maybe in turn that opens something else up for somebody else.
And that's the thing. I think on that same play, I think Blake is going to have probably more confidence for Julius Thomas to make that play. So he's going to go to him. He wants to feed him. If you go all the way back to the New England game, it was one of the first or second third downs in that game where he tried to hit Allen Robinson, who was covered by two different people. Now, he feels very confident.
Right. Especially coming off the previous week.
Absolutely. But that's where I say sometimes he's predetermining who he's going to.
Right.
Because he has Mercedes, who's running another cross route just underneath him, who has beaten his guy by about 2 yards that he just bypassed. And maybe A-Rob is his first guy, but you have to be able to see that he's being doubled and come off of him and get to somebody else. He also had Marquise Lee that ran maybe a 10-yard dig route, who also was open probably about 5 or 6 yards. He was open. So I'm just thinking that if this guy has two guys on him, you're predetermining that you want to go to this guy. And that's where you can't do it. You still have to go through your progressions. You have to let the defense tell you where to throw the ball to the open guy.
In your opinion and experience, how difficult is that for a young quarterback to get beyond that, to where he's like, you know, I got time. I'm going to go through my progressions. I've got to look for the best, highest percentage opportunity here.
Yeah, a lot of times you don't really have a lot of time.
Sure.
You have to know what the defense is giving you. And pre-snap is telling you, okay, more than likely I can already cancel off one. Now, I'm going to peek at him real quick, but I can pretty much cancel him off because I can tell that he's going to be covered or he's running to trouble. So I'm going to peek him real quick and then get to number two. And if he doesn't look good at, you know, out of the start of his route, then I'm getting right now to number three, number four to my check down. So those are, it happens really fast. And when you're a young quarterback, it you don't process it as fast as you want to, as fast as the coaches want you to, as fast as your O-line wants you to. And so that's where they get in trouble. That's where they get a lot of sacks. That's where they get a lot of turnovers, because they're thrown into trouble because they didn't diagnose the play beforehand.
I found something interesting here. We asked today, what's the biggest advantage the Jags have over the Buccaneers, right? And so we got some feedback on this. And this just goes to show you the differing perceptions of what ails the Jags, okay? On one answer that we got on Twitter from Daniel Stewart, he said, our advantage is our offensive line. He feels they should be able to open some running lanes and give time to pass, which they've, let's give some credit to the pass protection, right? One sack, and that was kind of a blown assignment between two rookie players.
I can even talk to you about that, too, because I was watching it and actually stopped the game. I'm like, oh, see, I see where he messed up. My wife's watching it with me. I'm like, let me show you something.
And
here,
tell
honey.
Us, what did you see on that play?
Well, so they had the double A-gap look, both linebackers in the A-gap.
Explain that to what...
So you have two linebackers standing in the A-gap and two tackles that are just outside of them. So the two tackles are shading the outside of the guards. The two linebackers that are in the A-gaps, they're shading both sides of the center. So they're putting a lot of pressure right now.
Up the middle.
Up the middle on the center. And sometimes they drop those guys out. Sometimes they drop one. Sometimes they bring both of them. So when you're in the shotgun, your guard does not have to squeeze down. We call that a squeeze. He does not have to squeeze down and take that linebacker, because unless he has a running back, which, what am I drawing a blank on?
T.J. Yeldon?
T.J. Yeldon was standing right there. So he knows, he should know that T.J. is right there in protection, helping him getting his guy. That's T.J.'s guy. That linebacker is his guy. Now, if the quarterback is under center, you're not going to wait for a running back that's 4 or 5 yards behind
right.
you to try to pick this guy up.
Who's
when
right there.
When your guard is going to the tackle and your center may be blocking the other linebacker that's in the other A-gap. So that's a quick threat on that quarterback. So if your quarterback's under center, you tell your guard to squeeze down, take him, and your running back knows now I've got a man up and take that tackle that was over the guard. But that's just you're trying to eliminate the threats that are the closest to the quarterback.
Right.
When your quarterback now slides back into the gun, now you can tell your offensive line block big on big. Hey, guard, you don't worry about the guy that's in the A-gap. You just block your tackle because he's 300 pounds, you're 300 pounds.
Sure.
Running back, you now still have your linebacker that's threatening the A-gap because the quarterback's in the center. He's away from that threat. And
So basically,
AJ didn't get that call. He didn't understand that my quarterback's back there. I don't have to squeeze this. I can stay on the tackle, and the running back can now get the guy in the A-gap.
So you got a couple of young guys.
Young guys just make me, yes. And so AJ's thinking, hey, you know what? I'm going to take away this threat, but it messed up TJ, and that's how they both made
the mistake. The reason I brought that one up is because someone then texted the exact opposite, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Nothing will change with the Jags until they address the O-line. Good teams have a good O-line. Great teams have a great O-line. Is this kindergarten or a professional football team? So you've got one guy on the one hand saying, our biggest advantage, I feel, going into this game will be the play of the offensive line. You got another guy that says, we got to get a completely new offensive line, or, you know, words to that effect. All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. John Osier will join us here from Jaguars.com. We'll get the latest on the Jags' preparations as they get ready to take on the Buccaneers in Week 5 of the National Football League season with David Garrard and Fat Tony here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, a couple quick things as we get set to welcome in Johnny O. You're talking about the basically a double A-gap blitz or just the A-gap. And for people who don't know, that's just simply the gap between the guard and the center, right?
Yes.
So that's all it was. And we had somebody text in and ask about that.
Well, if you go back and look at Peyton Manning's touchdown, that he kind of changed the pass blocking responsibilities in the game. I forget who it was against, but then he throws the little fade to his tight end in the slot. He kind of moved himself to the right to get away from a guy that he slid the whole line away from, but knowing that that guy was going to be unblocked just because they had those two A-gap guys, it presents a lot of problems for offenses, and that's what happens. People get confused on who they're taking, and when they drop that linebacker out and they bring somebody else from another part of the field, it gets confusing, and that particular blitz look has just been around now for about 8 or 9 years, and it's causing a lot of people a lot of problems.
You ever get up after getting crushed on a blitz and just start yelling like, somebody block somebody out here, man?
I've done that before, and my coach is, calm down, please. Calm down. You want those guys to block for you the next play, right?
Right, right. All right, let's welcome in Johnny O, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Hello, John Osier. How are you?
Good, good, and speaking of Cannon, David can probably speak to this better. I thought to only give up sort of that one glaring mental was pretty good for the first start. I was impressed with how he played.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I kind of came in late. I don't know if this was a hammer AJ Cannon.
No, not at all. We were just bringing up the fact that one person today on Twitter said they thought the biggest edge that the Jags will have against the Bucs will be the O-line, potentially. And another person on the text line said they're not going anywhere until this O-line gets fixed. It was just funny to me that people look at it completely differently.
Yeah, I think the good thing is that I think last year you would have looked at this matchup and thought, boy, this is a huge edge for the Bucs. They got some good young players. McCoy's a really good player. I don't know that it's a mammoth edge for the Jaguars, but the way they've been playing, you don't see any reason why they shouldn't hold their own in that matchup. I mean, it's been a remarkable turnaround to me for the offensive line. As we talked about during the break, I think they could get better run blocking, but to get it to where you feel like the sacks are under control, it's easy to forget what a huge storyline that was in December.
It was a jailbreak all season, practically.
Right.
71 sacks for the
and
year.
And your quarterback's attempting, in some games, 50 passes. It's not like he's not dropping back to pass.
Right.
They've passed the ball a lot this year.
50 times this week.
Right, and they're still protecting him. I mean, I was just looking at the numbers, you know, the rushing numbers and the sack numbers for this team. They're middle of the pack. They're the middle of the NFL in both. I think they're 18th in rushing per game. They're like 17th in yards per rush. They're giving up 8 sacks this year. The worst team in the league is Kansas City with 19. So they're right there, like tied for 15th in sacks allowed. I mean, the offensive line is dead middle of the pack. And last year they were bottom end on all of that. They were the worst at allowing sacks, and they were not good at, you know, the rushing statistics. They're much better this year than they ever were at any point last season.
641-1010, the number before we get deeper in with you, John. We got a caller wants to weigh in on the offensive line. That's Jason. Jason, you're on Jaguars today. Go ahead, please.
Hey guys. I actually think the offensive line hasn't been too terribly bad this year. I thought Sam Young played good when he did. Luke's not looked that bad. But I will say this, like what David was talking about with the double A gap, you watch sometimes and it still looks like Blake is having a hard time reading a defense. Even his coach coming out of college said, yeah, he really wasn't that good at it. He's gotten better. But what I also noticed, it looks like a lot of times he can read the initial coverage, but then the secondary coverage post-snap is where it looks like he's still getting confused. But I noticed the same thing exactly what David was talking about, that one blitz, how T.J. Yeldon didn't step up. And the other thing I also kind of wonder, too, with the Jags is we've got some good coaches. I do agree. And like Shannon Sharp said about Jacksonville specifically, you don't fire coaching staff at least till 6 years, 5 to 6 years. But I got to kind of wonder, are they coaches that can blow the whistle and say, here's what we're doing next, or are they actually teaching coaches? There's a big difference, and I think David would agree on that. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right, thank you. What is, you know, in terms of what he's talking about, the different styles of coaching, what is most effective with a young team? What are you looking for? Is it a teaching group that, you know, you've got a lot of young players still learning the finer points of the game?
I would think so. You would want a coach that is, you know, there to teach you how to play this game and to how to play this game effectively. And you don't want somebody that, you know, is always degrading, always yelling, always screaming, always coming down on you because, you know, your confidence is already, you know, very low anyway because you're young. You're a guy that's trying to make your way in this league. And so you want somebody that's going to build you up but also teach you the right things to do. And, I mean, I think Gus is great at doing all those things. I just think this team is still young. They still have pieces. They still have things they need to be more effective. And I think when you look at Blake, he has definitely come – He's definitely come a long ways. I think at times he will predetermine where he's going with the ball. And like the caller just said, sometimes the coverage changes, but he's still trying to get to that guy that he saw pre-snap. And sometimes they take that away once the ball has snapped. And so he has to learn and to get to that second, third guy in his progression. But when you look at it, I've seen tremendous strides from him. I think he has really come a long ways. That's why the sack total is down, because he gets the ball out of his hands. Sometimes he's a little more cautious when he throws the ball, but he still gets it out of his hands. Still
better to have an incompletion than
yeah,
a sack,
absolutely.
Right?
And so he's doing a lot of those things really good. And a lot of times when the ball comes out of his hands, you feel good that it's going to go to the right place until that bad mistake happens. And so that's where he's got to continue to get over making those bad mistakes. Now you're going to make bad mistakes. It's just how do you come back from those bad mistakes.
Right. By the way, Shannon Sharpe's nuts if you think he gets 6 years to evaluate a coaching staff in today's NFL.
That doesn't happen anymore.
What league is he watching? It's crazy. Maybe to fairly evaluate him, but that has nothing to do with it anymore. Nobody's getting 6 years to muddle along in the National Football League.
Right. I think because of the nature of the build, I think this staff is getting a little longer, but I don't think 6 years.
Right.
So, yeah.
Let me ask you, what are you hearing or hoping for in terms of Julius Thomas this week?
Well, you're hoping to see, you know, you're hoping to hear that he'll play. I thought last week, I thought there was very little chance that either he or Sendarek had any chance to play. This week, I'm interested to hear what we're going to hear.
Do you think there's
a chance, is what I'm saying.
I mean, conditioning is got to be somewhat of an issue. You can't simulate game situations as much as you'd like.
Yeah, but I think the fact that he has been able to run,
yeah,
he's been able to practice, I think he can be as close as you can be. There's still going to be that first game.
You think
thing
he's going
to
be kind of full usage or close to full, not like a 20-snap kind of guy. You think he's going to play a high percentage of the offense whenever he does return?
I would think that yes.
I would think they would go in
much more
thinking
than Derek would be able to. I think
that they would give him, you know, they would see how things go when the game starts.
Right.
I think they're going to think going in, we're not going to overwork him. But then as they see the game's going on, man, this guy is doing great. He's telling us his lungs are fine, his legs are fine, because that's usually what happens is your legs just feel like you're running in mud because, yeah, you've been out there running and training and all those kind of things. But when you've got other guys pushing on you, when you're trying to outrun guys with all of your might and all of your power, that's different than I'm running some wind sprints out here on the field. I don't have, you know, 200-300-pound guys chasing me trying to get the ball out, and those kind of things. So you're going to just test them and see as the game goes on, how do you feel? How are your legs? Are you able? And then is he being productive? Is he missing a lot of blocks? Is he catching a ball, or is he making a lot of mistakes? Those things will determine on how much more time he gets as the game goes on.
And remember, we're not talking about an offensive lineman, quarterback, or number one wide receiver here. There's going to be packages anyway, mm-hmm, where he's not in. So it's probably, you know, if an offensive lineman had to do that, it would be really noticeable. If a tight end maybe wasn't in some packages, maybe a lower percentage of situations where he'd have to be out. I guess not very well put, but there's going to be times where a tight end's not on the field anyway, so that may help his situation being able to contribute where he normally would.
All right, let's get one more call in here while we got you here, John. We've got Jim up next with another question about the O-line and batted balls. Hi, Jim.
Hey, morning, Mike. Real quick, I think you're in fault for some of the Jags. You got to tell them that the promos, the drive of the game, not...
Say, I didn't cut you off. What happened there? It may be my fault. I'll take
it. Probably is.
No, probably not. We hear you now. You're saying the drive of the game needs to be what now?
You need to explain the.
The only drive. Right, I got you. Right, okay. You're right. Now, we'd like it to be one of many good drives, right? Jim, we're having a. We appreciate the input,
technical
and the effort. The phone's going in and out on you this morning, but I get the point, Johnny. Today, you know, we'll find out a little bit more about Paul Posluszny, I'm sure, as the week goes along. That could be something that's pretty significant for this football team.
Yeah, and I've been surprised before, but I'd be surprised if he plays just because, you know, when you hear high ankle sprain,
right?
That's usually a trigger for a few weeks. Gus said on Monday, not a traditional high sprain, so maybe it's, you know, there are higher sprains than others, so maybe it's not completely high enough to take him down for a couple of weeks. If not, then it's big, because then you have a rookie middle linebacker, Thurston Armbrister, whose responsibilities are to call the defense and to be paused. And whatever limitations Paul has in coverage, they've been a very good run defense this year, and he's a big part of that.
Yeah, he's been among, if not, I think he was leading the league in tackles coming in this last week.
Yeah.
I don't know if he still is. But.
And with the exception of New England, I think he has played the run very, very, I mean, he has stood out playing the run. So that's a loss.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, what do we have coming up for you today? We got the .com Live today.
At 11:45, leading into Blake Bortles. And, you know, as always, Blake speaks on Wednesday, and David knows how much quarterbacks enjoy that Wednesday press conference. But it'll be interesting to hear what Blake says about the second half difficulties, because that's clearly an area for him that he knows he has to improve. And the offense, you know, you have to be blind not to see 3 points in those three games that we're talking about, the week 1, 2, and 4. It's a huge deal. So to hear how he addresses that, that's what I'll be listening for.
Wow. Dave just shook his head like, oh, man, what a burden. That 20 minutes a week I need to talk to you guys with the microphone.
It is tough because they don't get paid.
You try to get out of there in 12 minutes.
Is it 12? 12 is the cutoff. Yeah,
20 minutes might be what you're supposed to do, but you try to get out in 12.
You need a
Vito
good
never
media.
Lets you get out after
no.
12.
You need a good media guy right there going, okay, thanks, guys.
That's right. Yeah,
just
exactly.
Stepping in, wrapping it up.
Are you sure? I wanted to get some more,
I had a few more
questions here.
I wanted to say, yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
That's it. All right, Johnny. Oh, we appreciate it, man. Listen for Jaguars.com Live on Jaguars.com coming up at 11:45 today.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Talk to you soon. There he goes. John Osier from Jaguars.com on Twitter, of course, at John Osier, OEHSER. All right, coming back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL as well. It's a Wednesday brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. I'll start with the birthdays today. Happy 65th former Jaguar defensive coordinator Dick Geron, born in 1950. Johnny Morton was here, Tony, as a coaching intern, right? For a brief spell. I think so, yeah. Yeah, as a former wide receiver, obviously, still looked like he was in great shape when he was out here, 44 years old today. Priest Holmes, born on this date in 1973, had back-to-back seasons where he totaled 48 rushing touchdowns in the early 2000s. Three-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, and one of the guys that, with a collection of great AFC backs that perennially kept Fred Taylor out of the Pro Bowl, right? It was guys like that that just had Clinton Porter's having huge years, and Edgerrin James, and LaDainian Tomlinson. There were so many good backs in the AFC.
And one of the early running backs that embraced fantasy football.
He was the first guy that I can remember, the first high-profile player, period, that embraced fantasy football was Priest Holmes. God love you, Priest. 1976, Charles Woodson. Happy 39th. Unbelievable player.
Said he
still
wants to get Peyton for the first time this weekend.
Never gotten Peyton, but he's had picks in 18 consecutive seasons in the National Football League. Eight-time Pro Bowler, three-time first-team All-Pro, 62 career interceptions, 20 career sacks as well, and a no-doubt Hall of Famer in my mind. Now, I saved a couple of other things here. 1984, Chicago running back Walter Payton passed Jim Brown as the all-time rushing leader at the time on a six-yard run in the third quarter of the Bears' victory over New Orleans. Payton finished a game with 154 yards, which was his record setting at the time, 59th career 100-yard game. But this is one of my favorites, 1916. I always wondered, how did this happen? College football, Georgia Tech, Cumberland, 222 to nothing, okay? Here's how it happened. John Heisman, yes, that Heisman, right, was the coach at Georgia Tech. He's also their baseball coach. And apparently Cumberland, earlier in the year, had run up the score in baseball on him 22 to nothing, right? So they had disbanded their football program. So Heisman sends him a letter and says, I will pay you $500, which I guess is a lot of money back then, and your expenses if you come and play this game, put together a team. He goes, if you don't, I'm going to send you a bill for $3,000 for the loss of gate receipts that we're going to have. So they said, well, rather than pay this bill, they got together, history doesn't give an exact number, but between 12 and 16 players, a bunch of frat guys,
oh, man,
at Cumberland, just went and showed up to play football. They got murdered, of course. Right? They're not even a team. They just went out there and played. And, Dave, they never gained a first down. Georgia Tech didn't either, because on every series they scored. They just scored on every play, but they never had to pick up a first down. They scored on every set of downs that they had in the game, and he never let up, although they did shorten the quarters to 12 minutes in the third and fourth quarter.
Those were the days.
John Heisman, king of the sportsman, right?
Bitter.
All about
bitter
the sportsman.
About a baseball loss.
I appreciate that, man. If I were a Georgia Tech fan, I would love John Heisman for running it up on Cumberland College. Take that, frat boys. All right, there you go. This state in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. For all your roofing concerns, 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this state in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
There was a report that came out yesterday that said Colts quarterback Andrew Luck is dealing with a partially separated shoulder. The team is denying those reports. Luck was limited in practice yesterday, did throw the ball a little bit, and is hopeful to play against Houston tomorrow night. The Colts are also looking to add some depth at running back, apparently. They have reportedly worked out both Ahmad Bradshaw, who was with the team the last couple years, and Bryce Brown this week. St. Louis Rams linebacker Alec Ogletree has a fractured fibula, according to his head coach Jeff Fisher, and expected to be out at least 8 weeks while recovering from that broken leg. Jeff Darlington down in Miami as they begin the post-Philbin era. The first practice with Dan Campbell as the head coach. Here's the tweet from Darlington earlier here about 15 minutes ago. Dan Campbell just pulled the Dolphins team together in practice, split the offense and defense, and started Oklahoma drills. Here we go. And the fans in Miami, I've been watching the reaction. They're like, yeah, Oklahoma drills. Fans love Oklahoma drills. It's crazy. You know, one last thing. The NFL has announced the extension of the International Series through 2025. They will expand beyond just in England, Mexico, Germany, expected to be landing spots. Specifics of that were not mentioned. The 2016 International Series, how many games and where, will be announced a little bit later this fall, probably around the time the Jags are in England, is my guess.
Let's hope have some clarity on that. By the way, I think the Dan Campbell Oklahoma drills in direct response to the reports that you had Philbin telling the scout team to take it easy on Tannehill. So don't try so hard because you're messing with his mind, you know, so to speak. And then one guy apparently was going out there and he's like, I don't care, man. I'm going to stand out. I can't not go hard. So Tannehill started yelling at him, you know, about, hey, enjoy your practice squad salary and all that. Or your, scout team salary, yeah, whatever, practice squad, I'm sure. But so then the rest of the guys in the scout team were like, oh, the hell with this. Now we're all going to try. So then they were just piling it on with Tannehill. He's throwing a bunch of picks.
Well, what I heard was it was walkthrough, and the guys are picking the passes off when he's trying to complete them to
Was it a walkthrough?
It was walkthrough. So when you're trying to complete pass, you're trying to find all the confidence for your guys,
right,
that you can. And if we have walkthrough the day before the game, you don't want your scout team secondary guys walking and then sprinting up and picking the pass off. I mean, you have some young guys that's never been through walkthroughs before that do that kind of stuff. Like, oh, he's just going to toss it out here to
I'm going
to go make a play
this
on this.
It's not that hard.
And then you pull them to the side and say, hey, you can't make plays in walkthrough. It's called walkthrough for a reason. Everybody's walking. And so I can understand that. But
right,
to have
right
to get to the point where you got to say, hey, guys, you know, let's calm down. The quarterback should be able to stop practice at that point and say, hey, We're not picking off passes in walkthrough. Calm down.
Right. You know? I think he did to some degree from what it sounds like, but I think he didn't handle it the best way.
I think there's a little lack of respect down there for guys. So
yeah, you lack
just all around.
Really?
Like, they're not respecting him. He's not respecting them. That kind of stuff.
Boy, and he coming in this year, you look at his career trajectory and just looking at the numbers. Yeah. I don't watch him every week. I mean, such a steady climb that he's made and, you know, not going so well this year, and obviously they sunk a bunch of money into Ndamukong Suh, and he's really made zero impact for them at this point in time.
Well, so. I mean, they had a lot of expectations on them start the season, and when you don't fulfill them real early, things can go south real quick. And if you're not a team that is real poised and has a good leadership and all that kind of stuff, guys don't rally around each other. They start to point fingers, blame scout team, and all those kind of things.
Are you allowed to do Oklahoma drills with the CBA?
I
know you can have padded practice.
Right, maybe if you have a padded practice.
It's walkthrough. It's walkthrough.
For the players, it's the Wednesday of their bye week.
Yeah.
You know, and he comes in and he's like, Oklahoma drills.
Oh, then it's a perfect time to do Oklahoma drills.
I wonder just how the players
are reacting. He's trying to put his stamp on the team right now.
Are they going to revolt a little bit? Like, really? It's Wednesday of the bye week? And you...
I mean, they could. I remember Dan Campbell when I was there. Mm-hmm. I thought he was great. I thought he very professional coach. And he was young, but, you know, everything that I saw from him from when I was there was, this guy has the ability to be a good coach. You know, I don't know, head coach, maybe coordinator one day, that kind of stuff. But right now it's head coach.
What do you think about Oklahoma drills in general? And for people who don't know what they are, you're talking about a situation where you've got, what, the center, the quarterback, like,
it could be any guy.
Like the head-to-head.
Yeah, it's mano a mano. You put some cones out that say, hey, you're a running back, here's the parameters that you have to stay within. Don't try to sweep out wide. It's just these two guys blocking, one guy's trying to stand them up, shed them off, and make the tackle. And so they just want to see what kind of cojones, what kind of, you know, ability you have to stand up to another guy and just take him on. I don't know why it's called Oklahoma, but
maybe that's where it got popularized.
Yeah, maybe that's where it started. But it's basically you against him. He's trying to block you 5 yards off the ball. You're trying to push him back into the backfield, and then the defensive guy wants to shed. Now, that kind of, you lose it a little bit. The running back a lot of times still gets through.
Right.
But it's all about those two guys and who dominates that block or who dominates the offensive lineman.
Because we saw Tyson Alualu, you know, his rookie season get hurt during an Oklahoma drill. But, I mean,
guys do get hurt
in a lot of drills. So what I'm saying, is it worth the risk, or do you say, probably not going to have Ndamukong Suh participating in Oklahoma drills.
Yeah.
Know what
so
I mean?
Then after that, your coach is just putting out their guys that, you know, are young guys trying to make a name for themselves. Sometimes he'll put a receiver and a DB out there. That's
right.
Always funny to see. But Oklahoma drill
is beer truck. Not all built like you.
I used to love it back in high school. But nobody else was as big as me in high school, so.
Yeah, you were the king of the Oklahoma drills. The Carolina drills is how it went for you guys. All right, we got to take a timeout. We will come back. And don't forget, fan feedback spotlight today. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at DavidGerard9, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. And we're asking you today, where's the biggest advantage as they take on the Tampa Bay Bucks coming up this weekend? Mike Dempsey, David Gerard, Fat Tony here with you. You can get on board at 641-1010. You can also use the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at the same number. Jaguars Today continues in a moment, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along Jaguars Today, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the number. Also, go to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line here coming up. Don't forget, FanDuel open for week 5. FanDuel.com/Mike. Go head-to-head with Tony and I. I've had a few people tweet me this week, Tony, saying, what is the link to your league? It's the same link every week. You're not going to find it. You're not going to be able to search FanDuel for Mike and have it come up. But if you go to FanDuel.com/Mike, it'll take you directly to that, and you can enter. And once you're entered for $5, chance to win some cash. It'll show up in the FanDuel app if you have the FanDuel app downloaded on your phone. How are your fantasy teams doing so far?
About 500.
About 500?
About 500.
Okay. Does that mean within a game or two of 500?
Well, I just played two guys last week, in both my teams, which I had about 115 to 125, but they were like 150 and 160. They had, Devon Freeman, I think.
Devontae Freeman.
Yeah. You know, guys like the guys that you weren't expecting to have huge games, but could.
Did you win?
No.
They did. They didn't do.
Oh no, they won.
Yeah, so I'm saying they did you in.
Oh, they right, did me. They, right, no, they, not did I win.
No. Not okay. Did you win. They did you in.
Okay. Sorry,
I can see now how that could come out. All right, let's get a couple of texts in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Shad will tell Dave Caldwell to make changes after this year if they keep losing. The stadium is going to be slim if they come back from Tampa 1-4.
What do you think they have to be at the end of the year record wise?
See, I've always said, regardless of the record, I thought they had to be in the mix at the beginning of December, right? Like, not that you're definitely going to the playoffs, but
you just see your name in that bottom in the hunt.
And not be like have to have 8 billion things happen for you to survive one more week on that list, right? So, you know, in the AFC South, they may be able to hang around a little bit longer, but that's why this game this past week was so critical. You know, no need to rehash it again. I really couldn't tell you. I don't know what Shad is thinking behind closed door. I'm sure he's not happy with the losing, but at the same time, he bought into the vision, I think, of, building this thing from the ground up, from scratch. And, you know, I don't know what he's promised, Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley in terms of patience. I don't know if he's promised them anything, but you keep in mind, I mean, he had Mike Mularkey here for 1 year, right? Got rid of him. You know, that's why when people were talking about after last year, would he get rid of Gus Bradley? I thought, no way. You don't want the reputation of being the quick trigger guy, because then it's going to be that much more difficult to find a guy with any kind of resume to come in and take the job the next time.
I think there's going to be some grace from him after this season, just because all of his top end guys are hurt. Everybody is injured, and it's. I wonder what the team would honestly look like if all these guys were playing. You know, if Fowler wasn't hurt, Sendarik, all these guys, what would the team look like if these guys weren't hurt? If Julius wasn't hurt, I mean, there's so many guys. Now you have Linder that's not playing. I mean,
right.
I think there's going to be. I think there's going to be a little bit of grace for this season. Now, it still has to be trending in the right direction.
Right.
And last week, you know, there was some good, but then there was, you know, plenty of bad, too. That's why I say this week is there's a lot of worry for me in this week. Just because.
Worry what could happen if they don't win.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. The things start, like, guys are human in that locker room, and you don't beat Tampa, it's like, well, who are we going to beat? Who do we feel like we have a chance? Because everybody else has given up on us. Now, maybe they rally around each other and say, you know, nobody believes in us. You really haven't given everybody a reason to believe in you, so that's true. But that's what worries me. Like, this game, it's bigger than a lot of people probably think it is.
If you put the result of last week just out of your mind, or really if you put everything out of your mind, what they've done record-wise up to this point, I still expect them to win this week.
I do too.
Now,
but with that expectation to win and they lose, that's where
and that's the thing, Dave. I can't find myself expecting them to win many more games. I hope they prove me wrong, you know, and win a bunch more games, but I don't know how you can look at the schedule and say there are going to be many more contests other than this one that you're going to be more heavily favored in. I mean, Tennessee is shown to be better in the early part of the season than they were last year. So, you know, you have Tennessee is going to come in here. Look, they can go, they can beat Houston. They can beat Buffalo. They could beat a lot of teams, but I don't expect that necessarily because I haven't seen that performance up until that, this point in time. You know, and the thing with injuries too, if I'm the Colts, I'm like, you want to talk injuries? Luck. Do we need to go any further? Right. Yeah. And I mean, then Dwayne Allen and Greg Toler and Jarrell Freeman left the game on the first series, one of the better linebackers that they have. So that's, you know,
well,
you know how
it is. Well, it's not necessarily just the Colts. I think when you're talking about the questions this team is going to have to answer when we get to the offseason, there's 12 more games to play to see what it's going to feel like, what it's going to look like for the rest of this season, because I don't think anything's going to happen in season with Gus or anybody on this. I agree with you. I don't think that's going to happen. If it did, it would surprise me a little bit. But I think the questions that need to be asked about Gus, and as a former player, when you watch him, what do you think? What is your gut reaction to Gus Bradley as a head coach on game day? Is he getting that job done? And with or without the injuries, is he doing a good enough job on game days right now that you feel like, okay, maybe the injuries are the reason they're not getting things done? Or are decisions that the coaching staff is making, which goes back to Gus, a reason that they're not winning football games right now?
Yeah, well, clearly in the second half, there he's definitely getting, you know, not a passing grade for that, because you can't not have any points in the second halves of games. You have to be able to have plays set aside to go in the second half that are going to get you some kind of action, some kind of movement in the game where you're going down and scoring points. Like, you can't just bog down at the 40-yard line every time. That can't happen. There has to be some kind of plays drawn up where there's shot plays for the offense to have success on. And if you want to say, are there things that he's not doing, you know, I can't go to, you know, the way they're operating with time and timeouts, that kind of stuff. But just the fact that the offense has not been productive in the second half, that is the area where I see they have to be better, and they have to be better at designing plays that get them an opportunity to get down into the red zone, inside the 10-yard line, and then find ways to get the ball in the end zone. You have to be able to do that. If you're going to be any kind of decent offense, any kind of decent team, you can't just bog down and not put any points on the board, and you know that's been their story this year.
I've got this question for you on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Dave, do you ever or did you ever have problems hearing the play call in your helmet? And if so, what do you do?
Well, a lot of times what they tell you is you need to have some plays ready to go. For whatever personnel you have out there in the game, if you can't get the play by, you know, 17, 16 seconds because your headset goes out after 15 seconds, and if you don't get it, you need to be ready to call that reserve play that you have ready to go. And it's got to be a play that everybody knows. It's got to be a play that, you know, we didn't have to practice it, but everybody knows what it is. Like, so if you want to call, you know, four streaks, if you want to call four go, if you want to call a run play, if you want to call just a basic route combination, you have to be ready, because that happens at times. There's times where the communication, you can get half of it and that's it. Or you can't get anything and you're pointing at your headset saying, hey, where's the play? Your coach is pointing to you. You got to call it. So you've got to just have a handful of plays ready to go. And we've practiced that before. We've practiced it and practiced a bunch of times where they say, hey, we're going to have a few times today where the call is going to be yours. You look at the personnel and you just be ready to call your play.
Do you can you recall an instance when that happened to you that you hit a particularly big play on?
I had it happen to me before, but it was a lot of times where it was first and second down. So I would just get, because you don't realize until you're at like 14 and 13 seconds, and so you're not trying
so
to
you want something basic.
Yeah,
right?
You're
get
like
me three
hey,
yards.
Exactly. Let me just hand the ball off. Let me just call. Like sometimes a couple times I took a shot, but the defense they gave me was to get to my check down, and so but we got completions, and you know, you would get praise for being able to be ready for having that kind of play.
How difficult would it be in today's NFL for a quarterback? Now, I guess Peyton Manning has done it to a large degree, not completely though. you know, we used to see quarterbacks that would call their own game in the huddle.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and is the game become too complex for that to happen?
I would think it has become too complex because defenses give you so many different things. Now, you can, coaches give you a few different plays, and you can now choose which play when you get to the line of scrimmage, depending on the looks or depending on if you feel good about throwing the ball during the versus coverage. So they give a little, they put some of it in your hands. Now, when you get into the 2-minute drills, those kind of things, some coaches will allow you to have, you know, 15 plays at your disposal to be able to go through in your own memory bank. And it's always the same 15 plays so that you and your team can be comfortable running the 2-minute drill. Some coaches want that in their hands too, where they call the play to you in your headset as you're running up to the line of scrimmage, you know. So, I think the defenses and the offenses honestly have become too big now for players, quarterbacks to just call their own plays throughout the whole game because you get in so many situations that, you want to make sure you have everything down. You want to have the motions down, the right formations and all that kind of stuff. And so you don't want to leave it to a guy to just go through his mental Rolodex, basically, to pull up a play and say, this is the perfect play for the situation. Now, you practice it all week long, but it's just so much more helpful when the coach has somebody that's up high, looking down, seeing everything, seeing how the game comes around. And as a quarterback, you don't want to have so many thoughts going through your head that, okay, if we don't get this, you know, play right here, I have to call this on the next down. So it takes a lot off your plate, but then, you know, you have the ability too when you get to the line of scrimmage to check to a different play anyway.
All right, got this one in as well. Are there that many bad teams this year, or is it more competitive than recent memory? You look, and there are not too many teams right now that are running and hiding in the National Football League. I mean, Cincinnati's off to a great start. Obviously, New England is off to a great start. Denver's 4-0, but they could have easily lost a couple of those
Green
games.
Green Bay.
Green Bay, and then you've got Atlanta and Carolina. But you also have, you know, out west, you've got Seattle and St. Louis are 2-2. So they're not bad, but they're kind of in the middle there. You've got Dallas. You got basically the entire division, the East, except for Philadelphia. At 2-2, Philly's at 1-3. That's in the NFC. This whole division in the AFC South. You know, I think it's a little early to say through four games, but that's the part of the issue that we do see every year. So much turnover among the playoff teams. Something like there, like in the last 15 years, I want to say it's averaged around 5 new playoff teams every year. That's why when you look up and you say, "Wow, all these teams that were bad or at least now mediocre," or, you know, the mediocre teams get good or they dip up and dip down. And that's why I think it's frustrating, in part, that it's frustrating that the Jags, you know, if you look up and you say, man, if we come back from London this year with a, what would they be, 1-6 at that point if they lost their next three, why does it seem like the Jags, and we understand the reason with the youth and all this and the way they've gone about their rebuild, but I think that's part of what plays into the lack of patience from some Jag fans out there, that other teams seem to be turning it around more quickly. I know the Jaguars' vision is to build it so that once you turn it around, it is sustainable for a long period of time, and not everybody does that or is able to do that, but I do think it's too early to draw too many conclusions from the overall records around the NFL.
Yeah, I think it is. To talk about what you were just saying right there, I just think it would be tough to come back at, you know, 1-6 or whatever it would be like that, because then you start thinking, well, what do we have? What holes do we need to fill now to become a better team moving forward going to next year? And you're like, there's nothing that's just glaring right now that you would think, okay, well, we need this, we need that, we need those things. And so it's just, it's frustrating because you're like, you can see around the league what teams are great and why they're great, but then you look here, why aren't we any good? And so it makes it tough.
All right, we will come back. We've got your weekly injury report. Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute will stop by. We'll also take more of your calls and get to the fan feedback spotlight asking you, what do you think in terms of the Jags' biggest advantage going head-to-head with the Buccaneers this week? Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL. 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Our next guest, as a matter of fact, will be Dr. Stephen Lucy from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. We'll do your weekly injury report momentarily. Hey, right now, however, We have a pair of tickets to the NBA preseason, Atlanta Hawks and the New Orleans Pelicans, this Friday, 7 o'clock at the arena. If you want them, be caller number 5 right now at 641-1010. Tyler will hook you up. That's a pair of tickets to go see the Hawks and the New Orleans Pelicans in preseason action this Friday night at 7 o'clock at the arena. Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. He is one of many outstanding physicians with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. In fact, one of 31, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars, JOI's Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Lucy, how are you?
I'm great.
We missed you last week.
I was taking a little vacation.
You're allowed to do that.
I got out of Charleston Thursday before the monsoons came.
Good for you.
It was a well-timed trip.
Good for you. How are the tires on your car doing? Everything good?
You know, I was on the way over here, and either somebody slashed my tires or I must have hit something.
You probably hit something. Nobody would do that to you, Dr. Lucy. Let's talk labrums this week. Brandon Linders will keep him from playing again this year. Injured reserve for the Jacksonville Jaguar guard. Some guys are able to play through labral situations, tears or whatnot. What are the varying degrees that we're talking about dealing with, and how bad does it need to be for a professional football player to shut it down?
Well, you know, first of all, you think of the hip as actually a ball in a socket, but the shoulder is more like a cup in a saucer. It's not nearly as stable. The labrum is a rim of cartilage around the socket that helps stabilize the shoulder, and also the ligaments are attached to it. So if you dislocate your shoulder or partially dislocate it or sublux it, sometimes it tears. Now, some of those players can rehab it, get it strong again, and play through the season, and then, if necessary, get it fixed at the end of the season. Some of them try, in which is, I think this is a case, and it either continues to slip in and out or it continues to hurt, and that's usually when they shut them down and have it fixed.
And surgery, the recovery time for that typically is what?
You know, you're usually in a sling for about a month, then in rehab for 2 or 3 months, and we like for football to give these guys really 6 months is ideal, because you're trying to get this labrum, which is cartilage tissue, to heal back to the bone, and that just it takes 3 or 4 months for that to occur, and we want to give it a little extra insurance before they go out before somebody tries to rip the shoulder out of the socket again.
Right, but when you are rehabbing, are you able to lift weights and things like that? Or it's obviously within the program, but I mean you're not going 6 months without any kind of strain on the shoulder, I would imagine.
No, but you know, it does take a couple months we let them run, and then before you get in the kind of weightlifting that these guys do, it's about 4 months. Yeah, and so that's what gives you that extra 2 months, is to get your football strength back. So that's both the conditioning and deconditioning that goes through when you're in a sling and have surgery, plus the strength is also a problem.
Stefan Wisniewski had a labral repair, right, a labrum repair in the off season, and seems to have had no, you know, once he got through all the rehab and everything, has come back, doesn't have any issues with it, it appears right now. Once it gets fixed, and if you go through the proper procedures and give it enough time, is it a situation where you're more likely to have it recur, or are you kind of back to normal?
Some people are back to normal. I think we never make somebody better than new. You know, I think there's always a slight increased chance of an injury, but more or less with good surgery and good rehab, most of these guys are counting on being is good to go.
So you're telling me the wacko movement to do Tommy John surgeries preemptively is not necessarily a good thing, is what you're saying?
Not at all a good thing.
You've heard of that, haven't you?
Absolutely. And a lot of the baseball coaches, the first sign of elbow surgery, let's just get a Tommy John's, because you hear the successes. But what you don't hear is the other half of them that either don't come back throwing at the same velocities or don't come back throwing at the same level. So that's something that's necessary when it's torn, but certainly doing it too soon before adequate rehab and strengthening and trying conservative is not a good idea.
Let's do this. Let's have no Jaguar injuries to discuss next week. How about that?
And a W.
Right, and a W. Let's discuss the W. Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute, and here in the JOI studios, we wish you a good week, Doc, and make sure those tires are fully inflated.
That sounds like an afternoon project.
There he goes, Dr. Stephen Lucy. All right, today, Tony, Fan Feedback Spotlight. We ask folks to tweet us and post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page with their thoughts on where the Jags may have an edge against Tampa Bay Bucks this weekend. What kind of feedback did we get?
From Cristiano, he said the Bold City Brigade takeover. Darn right. From Paolo, our franchise quarterback has more experience than theirs. From Dusty, our fans are better than theirs at Bold City Brigade. Hashtag I need that shirt. From Jonathan, better experience in losing. From Daniel, advantage is our offensive line, which should be able to open up running lanes and time to pass. From Black Dog, we got Blake and the inspiration of 2,000 screaming BC beers. From Duval Doom, that's easy. Duval! And he's got the hashtag BCB and a picture of Martineau hanging out with the Brigadiers out there. From Dino.
Duval.
There we go. From Jaguars, new uniforms are not as bad as the Bucks. Other than that, from Alvaro, our cheerleaders are better looking, our mascot is better, our couch is political. Couch.
Coach.
Coach. It definitely says couch.
I read that one, but I believe they meant our coach. Is
from Isaiah, the Jags have a better O-line, better run game, better quarterback. From Joey, you tell me, because I got nothing. Not being negative, but I don't see an edge. Hashtag three-point dog.
Thank you, Joey.
From Clarence, quarterback and fans plus our stadium rocks, their sucks. Go Jags. Hashtag Jags Nation. From Demetrius, our D-line versus their O-line, we can make them one-dimensional, make Jameis very uncomfortable. From Irish Jaguar, Jags roster is much better than Bucks roster. It's a case of everyone putting it together on the same day. And finally, from Blake Bortles, facts, quarterback. Also, Blake Bortles has never lost at Raymond James Stadium.
Fact. All right. I would say our Bold City Brigade versus their unwashed pirate hooligans is what I would go with.
Scurvy.
Scurvy dogs that they are down there. Kyle was the winner of our NBA preseason tickets to the Hawks and the Pelicans. Tyler tells me right now we also have a four-pack of tickets to Jackstoberfest.
Oh, yeah.
For the weekend at the St. John's Town Center. We got two for Friday and two for Saturday. If you want to go to Jackstoberfest this weekend, hook it up with Tyler right now at 641-1010. We'll take caller number 2019. Now, I'm kidding. That would make Tyler answer a lot of calls. Actually, he'd just lie to you. He'd wait 5 minutes and he'd go, hey, caller 2019.
You're right. Yep.
Right? All right. We'll take caller number four at 641-1010. I think we still have Wes hanging on the line, so let's get him on under the wire. Wes, welcome to Jaguars Today. What can we do for you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for getting me in. Enjoy the show. But thanks. What I wanted to comment was I think that we're focused on whether Bradley's a bad coach. We need to kind of focus on is he a good coach, and I think that answer's in. I think that a good coach, I think that I don't see any of these players that are playing above their potential. I don't see any of them that are developing faster than they should. And I think that a good coach has that kind of effect. I think if you took the majority of the coaches in the NFL that have been fired, head coaches the last 2 years, with a few exceptions like, say, a Philbin, but most of them, you put them on this team, those head coaches would have won at least one game, if not two games. And I truly believe that. And that's people that got fired. So I just don't see Gus having a positive effect on the team like a really good coach would. On game day, he actually looks like he's out of touch. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you, Wes. I will say this, and I'm not trying to nitpick your point, because overall you can't come up with many that you say are outplaying their potential. It's tough to say what a guy's potential is until he plays up to it, right? But I think in terms of Allen Hurns coming in, Dave, as an undrafted rookie last year and to be the steadiest guy in this wide receiver core now for a season plus that he's been, have the kind of game he did this last weekend. Maybe that is his potential, but I mean, when the guy goes through seven rounds of the NFL draft and doesn't get picked, it's tough to make the kind of mark that he's made now through 20 games of an NFL career.
Yeah, and I think if that's his potential, then I think that's pretty good because
yeah.
A guy that wasn't drafted, I mean, to get this kind of productivity from him, great.
I don't know if he's playing above it. I mean, clearly, if you can do it, it is yeah. part of your potential. So
I think he definitely has, you know, still some more in him because he's young. You would think by, you know, this time next year, he's even that much better. I understand what this caller is saying.
I think he's saying he's, play above expectations.
Yeah, he
too.
Just wants to see more from his team. He wants
right.
to see his team win, you know, win a ball game that they're not supposed to win. And he would think that by now, he would be seeing that. And so I understand it because for the last few years, There's been just no winning going on around here, and at some point in time, you know, we've got to see it. We're tired of watching L's come across the screen.
No question. Let's hopefully, as Dr. Lucy said, bring home a W, and we'll talk about that next week. Dave, talk to me about Retro Fitness. What's going on?
We're still the hottest gym in town. Best cardio equipment, best equipment, period. Best facilities, best staff. I mean, just the best at everything. So please come check us out at RetroFitnessJax.com and our Bay Meadows location and our Harbor Village location, which is Atlantic and San Pablo. So please come in and check us out.
And RetroFitnessJax.com, as you said, is the website.
$19.99.
Can't beat it, baby. RetroFitnessJax.com. He is David Garrard, longtime Jaguar quarterback and a good friend of all of us here at Jaguars Today. Good to see you, bud.
Thanks, man.
He loves his Wednesdays, Tony. He's done now. His work is done for the week. He's David Garrard for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and for Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime coming up momentarily. Thanks to our friends at Metro Rooter for bringing the show every Wednesday for any size plumbing job, in-home, commercial, industrial. Same-day service, weekends included, the right people with the right equipment. That's the reason they've been serving Jacksonville so well for the last 37 or so years. MetroRooter.com online and 695-1911. 695-1911 for our Friday sponsor of Jaguars Today, Metro Rooter. That does it for us. XL Primetime next on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!